Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, I guess the good news, even before we get to the martinis, is the D.C. area was supposed to get 1 to 3 inches of snow, but it was so warm the last couple of days, it just never got cold enough, so there was a little bit of rain, but it was still enough to freak a lot of people out, but no school cancellations in the area.
Yeah, I salute Fairfax County Public Schools. Longtime listeners of this podcast know I get like 2 or 3 good rants a year about what wimps the local school board is and how the dew point gets too low. They say, oh, cancel it for a week. No, they stayed open because there was no snow on the ground, which has not been a sufficient reason to stay open in the past. We had the occasional, it's going to be really cold, so we can't have the kids waiting at the bus stop excuse. But no, maybe north of the city they got more, but I understand, you know, obviously the New York area is getting hammered, but right. It's been a very mild winter. I almost could live with a snow day, Greg. I may regret those words.
Be careful what you wish for. And yes, as you mentioned, it is supposed to be quite a bit worse further north, Philly, New York, Boston, and all the folks in the Northeast. So please stay safe up there. We should also tell you today that we're sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post their jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. More from ZipRecruiter in just a moment. So, Jim, we start with the good martini, which is almost a triple-barreled good martini. First of all, Judge Neil Gorsuch told at least a couple of different senators yesterday that he found Trump's public comments disparaging the judiciary disheartening and demoralizing. First, we heard it from Dick Blumenthal, so you never really know if he's actually telling the truth because, well, he's got a history. And secondly, Ben Sasse then said he pretty much said the same thing. Then Kelly Ayotte, the former senator who is guiding Gorsuch around Capitol Hill, put out a statement saying he wasn't talking about anything specific, but in general, any attacks on the judiciary are not good. So that should probably help him in his confirmation battle. Then the other good news on the judicial front is that Jeff Sessions is now the Attorney General of the United States. Yesterday, he was confirmed in the Senate by a vote of 52 to 47. Joe Manchin was the only Democrat to cross over. Everything else was along party lines. And so that long battle is finally over, punctuated, of course, by the Mitch McConnell-Elizabeth Warren battle. And McConnell invoking the rule by which Warren cannot disparage another senator while speaking on the floor. However, there was another senator's treatment that I think deserves a lot of attention here, Jim. This is Tim Scott of South Carolina, the only black Republican in the United States Senate. He decided to share some of the tweets he's received leading up to the Sessions vote and then had a little bit of analysis. Here's what he said. Here, first of all, the tweets.
Anthony Burnham at Burnham R says, "You are an Uncle Tom Scott. You're for Sessions. How does a black man turn on his own?" Anthony B. from at Political Art says, "Senator Tim Scott is not an Uncle Tom. He doesn't have a shred of honor. He's a house Negro, like the one in Django." He also writes, I guess Anthony Burnham has been fairly active recently on my Twitter feed, "I'm a complete horror. A black man who's a racist against black people, a big Uncle Tom piece of fertilizer. Think for yourselves. You are a disgrace to your race. I left out all the ones that use the N-word. Just felt like that would not be appropriate." You see, what I'm surprised by, just a smidgen, is that the liberal left that speaks and desires for all of us to be tolerant do not want to be tolerant of anyone that disagrees with where they are coming from. So the definition of tolerance isn't that all Americans experience a high level of tolerance. It's that all Americans who agree with them experiences this so-called tolerance.
Jim, obviously the tweets aren't the good martini, but Tim Scott exposing it and exposing the larger issue of selective tolerance. Overall, a good day for conservatives in the judiciary, I think.
It is. And I just kind of, the observation on Scott would be everybody who speaks their mind in the public square is going to get some pushback. You think back to the Norman Rockwell painting of the Four Freedoms and the freedom of speech. There's a guy speaking at a town hall meeting and everybody's kind of looking at him. And he's doing it without fear. He's not doing it without concern about retribution or the government coming after him or something like that. And the tone and the style and the culture has changed. If you come out and speak your mind, you will be hated. You will get messages from people telling you that they hate you. It is now part of the job. It is, I would say, part of the job. It's not just part of being an American. Free speech for your ability to speak your mind means that others have the free speech to express themselves in just the ugliest, nastiest ways. And for all the horrible things tweeted at Tim Scott, I wouldn't want any of those people thrown in jail most days. But one of the things you kind of, if for anybody else who looks at it and says, oh my God, this almost isn't worth it. I can't stand this. Every day you go onto Twitter, you go onto social media, and you just get this bile thrown at you. You know, I think there's a really good chance Tim Scott gets it worse. And Tim Scott gets up every day, does his job, stands for his beliefs, takes the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. And I'm glad he did that, because I feel like for almost every American, if he can take that, I can deal with whatever is going to get thrown my way this day and every other day.
Excellent points. Anything on Sessions and Gorsuch?
I don't know if we've necessarily reached the point where Trump promised that we would be tired of all the winning. but we're getting there, right? I mean, you know, Sessions confirmation. I mean, the left pulled out every single lever they had. Couldn't get a Republican to vote against Sessions. Joe Manchin voted for Sessions. And obviously now there's talk. I think we got to think seriously about this, Greg, that there's going to be at some point some really good, principled, progressive, hard left. I'm picturing a Rachel Maddow type, or maybe Sally Cohn will run in West Virginia against Joe Manchin and the Democratic Party. Sally Cohn said last night she's planning on packing up her car, heading down to West Virginia, and spending the next 23 months doing everything she can to support a progressive alternative, to which Charlie Cook said, please do. I'll help you pack. Good luck with that. That's where we are. So again, I'm making air quotes as I say this, bipartisan support for Sessions. If you said to me that Betsy DeVos was going to be the more controversial pick than Jeff Sessions, I would not have predicted that scenario. But again, this is a fairly solid Republican Senate majority. Former State Attorney General Luther Strange stepped in to become the new senator to replace Sessions. So the Republican majority of 52 seats is intact. All in all, Democrats can make a lot of noise. They can try to throw sand in the gears. But in the end, you know, Republican appointees are going to be confirmed by the Republican-controlled Senate, which is good for Gorsuch, and it's good for, the entire Republican agenda, really.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and we go to Tucker Carlson Tonight, the very popular new primetime show on the Fox News Channel. Last night, among many other topics, Tucker was talking about what I referenced a moment ago, and that was the dust-up between Mitch McConnell and Elizabeth Warren, and her breaking the rule that forbid disparaging other senators while speaking on the Senate floor. Hugh Hewitt thought that was brilliant, which led to Tucker Carlson suggesting something that might raise some eyebrows.
I am very happy. The last time a left-wing law professor led the Democratic Party, at the end of his 8 years, they were down 12 net seats in the Senate, 50-plus seats in the House, 14 governorships, and 900 state legislators. So I'm all for left-wing law professors becoming the face of the Democratic Party.
Really? I mean, I don't know. I see your point. I think it's a smart point. But I also think, in fact, I'd bet money that if Elizabeth Warren had received the Democratic nomination, she'd be the president right now. Because she is in line with what Democratic voters think. She has a worldview. She can articulate it. I don't agree with it. But she's not just an identity politics person. She's got a consistent left-wing economic view that has a lot of support in the country.
Jim, I don't think Tucker's the only one who believes that. A lot of people think that Elizabeth Warren is essentially the female version of Barry Sanders, only she combs her hair.
Bernie Sanders, not Barry Sanders.
Yes.
Now, she can cut left as fast as Barry Sanders ever did to the Detroit Lions.
So what do you think of that? Do you think she would have political traction on a national scale?
You know, we might not necessarily expect this to come from Tucker Carlson, but I think this is worth chewing over. And I can really I can see both sides, because on the one hand, let's imagine this scenario. Elizabeth Warren would not have had the FBI server issue. She would not have had the consistent lying about it. I'm not necessarily going to say Elizabeth Warren is a lot more honest than Hillary Clinton is. I'll just say that it's harder to perceive her lying. She's a much better liar than Hillary Clinton is. when it comes to that, I think the Tucker Carlson's point about her, at her heart, there's a lot of populism running through her message. And that's not all that different from the populism running through Trump's message. Now, on the other hand, the reason you could hear Hugh Hewitt kind of audibly scoffing in that. I think that there's, we should also not overstate the appeal of Elizabeth Warren. I was watching her speak the other day, Greg, and it just kind of struck me. I don't know if you see her the same way. Elizabeth Warren always looks and sounds like the HR administrator who's saying that she can't accept the forms you just filled out because you use blue ink instead of black ink. Right? It's kind of this hectoring, no, you can't, and it's just, I don't know if that's a persona that will be broadly appealing. But having said that, Elizabeth Warren will avoid a lot of the giant honking hip, implausible messaging hypocrite issues that Hillary Clinton had, the dead broke in the White House. Oh, I'm not part of the establishment, all kinds of stuff like that. And if this is the direction the Democrats are shifting in, then we on the right should not underestimate this. I think this will be more appealing than Hillary Clinton is. And before you say, oh, Jim, I should point out, Hillary Clinton was probably the worst nominee the Democrats have had, at least since Michael Dukakis and maybe even further back. Right. So in a way, yes, it's good Republicans won in 2016. It's very good. But we shouldn't, pat ourselves on the back too much. We ran against a very flawed opposition that they're not likely to emulate in future cycles. So if Elizabeth Warren, there's this theory that, McConnell knew what he was doing by elevating Elizabeth Warren. She's a very off-putting image for the party. In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. And I kind of hope Republicans are wary of this, or recognizing that, in other words, they got to bring out that hectoring, nagging, insufferable, I know everything part. And one of the things I'm kind of struck by, I was talking about this with somebody yesterday, my last point, Elizabeth Warren. Greg, could you imagine any Republican senator claiming to be a member of a minority group and then not really having a plausible claim to be a member of that minority group?
That's right.
Right? I mean, like the press reaction would be apoplectic, right? If Elizabeth Warren were not a left-wing Democrat, she would be Rachel Dolezal, that woman who was head of the NAACP who was whiter than I am, okay? Talcum X was the nickname that got thrown around there, okay? So on the one hand, she has this built-in insurance that kind of guarantees this. On the other hand, I kind of feel at this point of like, hey, wait a minute. She's not a minority. She pretended to be a minority in order to get an advantage that other minorities deserved. Like, I kind of am surprised this hasn't really hit her more. Now, it's worth noting, I think the last time there was a poll in Massachusetts, the number of people who said she did not deserve re-election was 46%. I think the number that she did was 44%. So
Right. She's
less popular in a home state than she might be nationally. But I guess I'm saying I just would urge Republicans not to sleep on Elizabeth Warren. And kind of recognize the idea that, in the you're getting screwed over by rich, powerful people. There's always fertile ground for that kind of argument. And, it could be one that Democrats could get traction on in 2018, 2020.
Can you imagine if the Republican had not only given that line of bull about their heritage, but then tried to back it up by saying, well, look at my high cheekbones. The internet would have completely exploded.
Was it like a crab omelet or something? Was her traditional, right? Like all those, middle Great Plains Indians and their crab omelets.
Fortunately, even if Elizabeth Warren is somebody that the American people might want to be president, the good news is that the American people aren't hiring for almost four more years. But the question now is, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place is not enough to find the quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all of the top job sites, and now you can.
With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to more than 100 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with just a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And Jim, on to our crazy martini now, and it saddens us beyond words to report that it's a follow-up to yesterday's crazy martini. Yesterday's crazy martini, if you weren't with us, was Donald Trump tweeting about the shabby treatment his daughter Ivanka got from Nordstrom because they decided to discontinue her fashion line. And then we found out that other retailers are either killing it altogether or just blending it in with other stuff, and it's not going to be featured prominently like TJ Maxx and Marshalls and so forth. Well, Kellyanne Conway was on with Fox and Friends, and she decided to not only defend the president, but decided to turn herself into a pitch woman for Ivanka Trump's products.
They're using the most prominent woman in Donald Trump's, most prominent, his daughter. And they're using her, who's been a champion for women empowerment, sure, women in the workplace, to get to him. Just, so I think people can see through that.
30
go
seconds.
Buy Ivanka's stuff is what I would tell. I hate shopping. I'm going to go get some on myself today.
So that was one direct ad. She wasn't done, though. She couldn't leave the interview without saying it again.
This is just, it's a wonderful line. I own some of it. I'm going to give a free commercial here. Go buy it today, everybody. You can find it online.
And, of course, she did that interview from the press room with the White House logo right behind her. Jim, this is bordering on illegal, I'm pretty sure at this point, by using the Office of the Presidency and the staff to blatantly promote private products. Kellyanne Conway does not work for Ivanka Trump. And, oh, by the way, Ivanka Trump no longer even works for Ivanka Trump when it comes to this stuff. So what is going on here?
Yeah, so back in the transition period, Trump had talked about somebody on L.L. Bean who had supported him. There was talk about organizing a protest of L.L. Bean, and he said, buy L.L. Bean on his Twitter feed. And I had pointed out that when it comes to endorsing products from an elected official, particularly a president, like when the president goes and gives a speech at the Solyndra factory, is that an endorsement? Is he saying when he says this company is the future, companies like this are the future of America? Is that an official endorsement by their products? Well, it certainly does kind of walk up to that line. I think what Conway's doing here steps right over that line. And you don't have to be a crazy left winger to make this argument. I think it was kind of interesting to see a comment from Peter Schweitzer, who hopefully our listeners remember as the author of Clinton Cash. He is the kind of crazy left winger who worked closely with Stephen Bannon. Meaning not a left winger at all. He says, look, to encourage, they've crossed a very, very important bright line and it's not good. This is his comments to the Washington Post. To encourage Americans to buy goods from companies owned by the First Family is totally out of bounds and needs to stop. Clearly the Trumps feel some of this is related to politics, but whether that's true or not, these marketing battles need to be fought by Ivanka and her company. They cannot and should not be fought by government employees in the White House. It's time to move beyond the mindset and the role of the businessman and assume the mantle of commander-in-chief. I think Schweitzer is completely right here, meaning that, it may be very unfair that people are protesting Ivanka's line of clothing, that people are deciding they don't want to stay in the Trump hotel, that people are saying don't want to live in a Trump property. When you choose to run for president, you're going to have consequences like that. That's just part of the price of the game. That's part of, if you don't want to be attract controversy, you can't be involved in the political realm. And I can, feel a certain amount of sympathy to Ivanka Trump. I think her brand is, the image of her brand is changing very rapidly. We've gotten occasional, suggestions that she is maybe one or two or maybe a lot of steps to the left of her father. No doubt she loves her father. Her father loves him. The emotional parenting side, it's very easy to see why President Trump would, take to Twitter and denounce anybody who was appeared to be punishing his daughter. We emotionally get that, but that's not what the job requires. And Harry Truman got in a little bit of trouble for this way back when. You're the president. You got to focus on this kind of stuff. And for Kellyanne Conway, like you can't. This is something where you really kind of have to punt on that stuff, and you cannot go out and say, oh no, everybody should go out and buy her products. This is because that comes really close to the White House doing endorsements, and that's not what the job is. So hopefully they learn from this, but I'm not terribly optimistic. My fear, Greg, is that we are not, we're now in the, we're going to be on day three of Nordstrom Gate, and it's going to continue for weeks and weeks because neither Trump nor many of the people around him have the impulse control to recognize I can't do this. I'm in a different role now.
Ugh. Can't we please focus?
Happy
on
Thursday, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.